Before we get started with today's episode, a quick word from our sponsor. If you're like me, you're probably doing a little spring cleaning, not just around the house, but around your business too. Well, why not reduce your digital clutter with NetSuite by Oracle? You can reduce costs and headaches in the process. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and with one source of truth. And with NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, and you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems, go from many to just one. You improve efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have made the move. Cut costs, boost performance, and reduce digital clutter. That is a smart move for sure. So by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Just head to netsuite.com/SPI. That's netsuite.com/SPI, netsuite.com/SPI. Hey, we have an amazing event coming up, the Expert Advantage Workshop Series, where every day for a week, starting on Monday, May 20th, it's myself and another expert coming on to present to you about various kinds of things to help you with your brand and your business. Our brand new experts in residence and pro are going to be there to co-host these workshops with me. And you're not going to want to miss it. You'll have a chance to ask all of them questions, and it's completely free to join. All you have to do is go to smartpassiveincome.com/advantage. Wednesday, May 22nd, we're going to be talking trademarks, copyrights, how to know when to do it, what IP can you do it with, and the common pitfalls that most people fall into when it comes to intellectual property 101 with Yasmin Salman Hamdan. And you're not going to want to miss that on Wednesday, May 22nd. And then finally, to finish off the expert week, on Thursday, May 23rd, we're going to be talking with Pamela Slim about how to monetize and scale your IP and position it and package it in a way that is unlike anything you've really been taught before. Incredible value from Pamela and all of our experts on our Expert Advantage Week. And all you have to do to sign up and join and get all the links that you need is smartpassiveincome.com/advantage. Again, one more time, smartpassiveincome.com/advantage. Join us on our Expert Advantage Workshop Series. You're not going to want to miss it. Again, smartpassiveincome.com/advantage. This is a Smart Passive Income Podcast with Pat Flynn, session number 88.
Ha! What did I tell you? 88 miles per hour!
Welcome to the Smart Passive Income Podcast, where it's all about working hard now so you can sit back and reap the benefits later. And now your host. He wants to hear a voicemail from one of the kids out there, Pat Flynn.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for great talent. Match with them, thanks to Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data. Plus, their matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You can ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employees agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. I love how simple Indeed is, and it manages everything. Again, all in one place, from the screenings to the messagings, interviewing. You can do it all from Indeed, which makes it super easy to hire the right person that you need. So join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/smartpassive. Just go to Indeed.com/smartpassive right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/smartpassive. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Pat Flynn, and welcome to session 88 of the Smart Passive Income Podcast. 88 is, of course, a very, very significant number for me because 88 miles per hour is what it took to get the DeLorean to go back into time in my favorite movie, Back to the Future. That's where that sort of screaming quote from Doc Emmett Brown in the beginning came from. That was actually me just pointing my face away from the mic, and I think it sounded kind of like it. But anyway, I watched that movie when I was a kid. I fell in love with it. And speaking of kids, I know a lot of you who are listening to the show actually are kids, like literally like 8 to 12 to, I mean, 16 years old. I've met some of you guys are incredibly inspiring. I only wish I had your entrepreneurial spirit when I was your age. And so parents out there, if you're listening to this with your kid in the car or in the house or whatever, I mean, that's exactly why I keep this show clean. But if you feel that your child has some sort of entrepreneurial spirit, they have questions, I would love to hear from them. If they go to speakpipe.com/Pat Flynn, you can have them use your mic on your computer or whatever. Have them ask me a question, whatever they have questions about entrepreneurship, business, maybe it's help with math homework or, you know, whatever. I just want to hear from them. I would love to produce an episode that is all about answering kids' questions about entrepreneurship because I know this is incredibly important stuff that I wish I knew when I was your age. I've met some of you at meetups. I mean, you guys are – some of you are writing books at like age of 10 and already doing research for some businesses. Like that is awesome. And if, for those of you listening out there who aren't kids, if that doesn't inspire you, like to hear – kids like getting into this world of entrepreneurship and business. I mean, that is awesome. I don't know what else can inspire you. And of course, I have two kids of my own, and they're pretty young, but I can already see my son sort of thinking differently. And I don't know if it's because his daddy is an entrepreneur or whatever. Maybe it's in his genes, but you know, it's just so cool. So I'd love to help the kids out. Again, speakpipe.com/Pat Flynn. Love to hear from you. Now, let's get on to today's episode. Today's an awesome episode because I have a guest who I've known for a very long time. I've met him in person several times at conferences. I've been on his show a few times. He's just an incredible speaker, an incredible interviewer, and somebody I actually really looked up to quite a bit, and I still do because he's just been doing so much, and he's gone through this incredible transformation over time, and to see where he is now and what he's doing and what he's gone through to get here is just amazing. So I'm really, really happy to welcome my good friend Srinivas Rao from Blogcast FM. You probably, a lot of you probably listen to his show. He's done hundreds of interviews, like I think over 400. And it started out as sort of an interview show interviewing other bloggers and their success stories. And, you know, we're going to talk about sort of the transformation that he's made. And it's just his show has become so much more than that, so much more inspiring. And he's doing these things like events and writing books. And just we talk about that. We talk about a lot of the numbers and success he's had recently and what it took to get there. So let's just get right into the interview. I'm so happy to welcome Srini to the Smart Passive Income Podcast. Srini, dude, what's up? Welcome to the Smart Passive Income Podcast.
Thanks, Pat. It's good to be here. It's funny because usually you're the one on the other side of the mic with me, and so first time we're doing this, so it's cool. Thank you so much for having me.
No, you know, I'm really excited about that because, Srini, you know, I've been following Blogcast FM for a really long time. I've seen its growth. I've seen where it's been and sort of where it is now. It has changed so much, and it's not really, you know, a podcast or an audio show about blogging anymore. It's grown to so much more now. How do you feel about where it's taken or like the journey you've been on?
You know, it's interesting you bring that up, right? Because it's true. It's really not a podcast about blogging anymore. It's actually about much more. I mean, if you look at the last maybe 6 to 7 weeks of guests, it's funny. I can't remember the last time on the show where we were talking about blogging advice. I mean, it's a storytelling show where we find ordinary people who are doing extraordinary things. And, you know, of course, they share tips and tactical stuff from their life. But, you know, we talking about how to grow a blog is kind of a lost. That's just not what we do anymore on the show. I mean, I've had a happiness researcher who talked to me about scientifically proven advice to become happier. I've had a peak performance psychologist who was a Juilliard trained violinist. But I think that, you know, what I would say is that what is happening is the show is turning into a storytelling show that takes a holistic approach about how to run a business because, you know, your happiness is important to being able to run a business. Your health is important. And so really, I am constantly on the lookout for ordinary people who do extraordinary things. And, you know, it's funny. Somebody emailed me, tweeted me the other day, say, hey, I have a book called 65 Blogging Tips that, you know, I'd love to be interviewed about. And it was so weird to think I'm going to have to reply from the Blogcast FM account saying we're not really looking for nice bloggers to interview, you know, because, you know, I'm interested in stories. I'm interested in people who are doing real things, like, you know, not just like to me, I'm like, everything that drives my guest selection is curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Who are the, you know, for those of you who haven't listened to Srini before, I highly recommend you check out Blogcast FM. If you were to recommend one or two episodes to people, which ones would they be?
So, you know, recently we ran an interview with a woman named Meg Warden. I mean, this is convenient. Like we've ran all our nine of our best interviews, our most recent ones because of our upcoming event. But Meg Warden, you know, it's funny. Somebody asked me, he said, you know, what's your favorite interview? I said, you know, I used to think that I couldn't find one out of the 400 and it was an unfair question. But Meg had such an amazing story because she spent 2 years in federal prison. And I mean, you talk about somebody who is a model of reinvention, radical transformation and possibility. It kind of makes you look at the things in your life and say, well, what the heck am I complaining about? I've got, mm-hmm. I've got a world of potential. And so what we're constantly doing is finding people like this, people who are really outliers, people who, despite any sort of circumstances, in some case, because of their circumstances, end up going on to do these really amazing things.
Awesome. I'll definitely link to that in the show notes. I am really excited to check that one out. Actually, I haven't checked it out yet. Now, you'd mentioned a lot of things about storytelling and bringing stories mm-hmm. onto the show. I just want to emphasize, I mean, you and I both have done plenty of interviews together. I mean, you've done, four times as many as me, so you're even more of an expert in this. But how important, let's talk about interviews really quick. I think you and I would both encourage as many people as possible to get behind the microphone and start interviewing people for several different reasons, not just to bring in interesting stories on your show, but there are so many other benefits that can come from doing these interviews. What are some of the amazing things that have happened in your life or for your business as a result of doing these interviews with people?
Well, that would take a whole hour we could spend the whole hour talking about that. But I mean, I've gotten opportunities to speak at conferences. I've gotten opportunities to collaborate with people on various projects. I think probably the greatest gift, of course, is just the connections that form and the knowledge that you learn. But, I want to comment on one thing. There's sort of this podcasting renaissance going on. And mm-hmm. part of, I think, what makes what we do so different is that you'll find people on Blogcast FM that you'll never find at other shows, because I go out of my way to look for people who don't appear on other shows. And that's not always easy. Because I don't want to tell the same story that's been told over and over again. It's awesome that you get Tim Ferriss on your podcast, but truth be told, Meg Worden, a much better interview. Because she's got a perspective that hasn't just been spread 100 times. And don't get me wrong, I appreciate that somebody like Tim comes and shares his message, but there's a big difference between somebody like Tim who's on a media tour promoting a book, doing interviews, and somebody who comes to share their just raw, honest, sort of unmistakable truth. And amazingly enough, I think that's one of the temptations I've seen far too often with especially newbie podcasters who are starting these interview-based shows is they think, oh, I just have to get a big name. I have to get somebody like Pat, or I have to get somebody like Srini. Whereas, to me, I mean, I'll tell you, the real gems are the people that you might not think would be. But, to me, everything says, if you find somebody whose story sounds fascinating to you, who cares how big they are? I'll give you another example. Greg Hartle is my Blogcast FM backstage co-host, and now he owns a small equity stake in my company, and he's been transformative. But when I found Greg Hartle, his project $10 in a laptop was 6 weeks old. He didn't have a massive following. So I think it's the thing that we have to avoid when it comes to this is sort of for lack of something less crude, this whole hero worshiping mindset. Right. Amazingly enough, I found a less profane way to say that. I think that we have to stop one putting these people on pedestals and realize that they are human just like us. And then, of course, realize that just because somebody is new to the web or new to the online world, it doesn't mean that they might not have just pure gold to offer you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of my most popular shows, or I know some of my most popular shows are ones that were done with people who nobody's ever heard of before. Yes, I've had Tim Ferriss on in episode 51. Gary Vaynerchuk's going to be in the next episode for those of you listening. And that's cool. That obviously there's just the name recognition alone will help the show. But some of the most popular episodes were the ones with the golden information from people nobody knew about, like Mike Doonan, who started an iPhone app company to help people or help children with speech therapy, or Lane Amon, who's making six figures doing scrapbooking. I mean, that's stuff mm-hmm. that people can relate to and they can get on that same level as them.
Exactly.
Because they're not on the pedestal. But
exactly. I think that's a big thing is relatability, right? Like you have one of the things, we try to show models of possibility on our show. We want people not to look at them and say, wow, that's amazing. I'm inspired. I could never be that, but just look at that and say, I have that inside of me too.
Right. I love that. Models of possibility. I'm writing this down right now. Now, talking a little bit more about, I mean, we have a lot to cover and there's a lot of things I want to share. You're doing some amazing things with this event that's coming up that I want to talk about. You've written a lot of successful books recently and you even got on the Glenn Beck show, and that's a crazy story I want to make sure you tell. But let's talk about interviews really quick, because this is something a lot of people are doing and a lot of people are starting to understand the benefit of doing interviews and reaching out. It builds relationships with these people. Like you said, it gives you all these new opportunities. You get to just make awesome connections. So what are some tactical, strategical things that you've learned over the course of your 400 interviews that mm-hmm. you feel you can share with people who are just getting into the sort of interview process? How do you get and extract the best information from people?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, and hopefully one that I feel I can do justice to. You know, obviously, everything I said before this is actually a foundational piece, so keep that in mind. But to me, I mean, one of the big things is that you don't treat it like an interview, but a conversation. Because the problem, like, I don't like scripted. Like, I can tell when somebody has planned out just a series of questions, and it's mm-hmm. the most uncomfortable, awkward feeling.
You don't go to a conversation like if you and I were to talk at like a coffee shop, we wouldn't be like,
precisely,
question number one, Srini, is this and this. Oh, next question, this is, and without any like follow up or anything.
Well, and that's the thing. It's you know, like the cool thing with the approach that I take is it's like you get to sit there and eavesdrop on a conversation I'm having with somebody in a coffee shop, and it's just like me talking to a friend of mine. So that's one thing is the conversational approach. Now, this is debatable, and I, you know, some people will say I can never imagine doing that, but I think it's a pretty known fact by now that I don't script anything. And the reason I don't do that, you know this, Pat, is that it allows you to listen much more effectively. And I mean, I think one of the common comments you'll hear is, wow, nobody's ever asked me that before when you've been on Blogcast FM. And even you can attest to this. I remember you saying, yeah, you don't let somebody off the hook with a shallow answer. Like, I drill them until I feel there's nothing left there. You know, and the analogy I'll liken it to, here's a simple structure, actually, that I think will be useful, is you ask a question, you listen to an answer, and then you ask a question about the answer that was just given. So that way you have this repeatable structure and framework that you can keep doing. And you just use that until you get to the end of the conversation. Now, you know, this takes some skill. I've done it for a very, very long time. So I've got it, you know, down, and I still work at it every day. Here's another thing. This sounds crazy to some people, but I go back and I listen to every interview two or three times. Like, I listen to it once. Why I do my own editing is so I can figure out what I would do differently and how I would change it. Then I, you know, go. So like each interview, I'll listen to it once, obviously, while I'm doing the interview, another time when I'm editing, and then another time I'll actually play it a few times when I'm going for a walk. And what I look for when I'm doing that is I try to find places where I felt there was more and I didn't actually dig deeper. Mm-hmm. Like, what did I leave? Like, what stones did I leave unturned that would have been juicy? Then the third thing I would say, this is something that I feel way too many people miss, is that at the end of the day, the interview is not about the guest and it's not about you. It's about your listener. That's the most important person. The funny thing, the person that you actually don't have any interaction with in this process is the one that matters the most.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And I want to touch on something you just mentioned, which is listening, because I remember I struggled so much, and I know some people do this because I've been on interviews and I can just tell. It's hard to listen. This sounds ridiculous, but when someone's giving you an answer after you ask them a question, sometimes it's hard to listen. And I know when I was doing this for the first time, I was really what I was doing when people were answering was I was coming up with my next question, or I was trying to figure out, you know, where to go from there. And so I wouldn't be able to follow up with these great questions. And I think what you'd mentioned, you know, just approaching it like a real conversation where, mm-hmm. okay, you don't even have to look at a piece of paper. Maybe you have a little bit of an outline, so you want to make sure you stay on course, but, you know, just actually listening and having a conversation. If you can put that in your head when you're interviewing people, it can do amazing things, again, like you said, for your audience who's there listening on the other end.
Let me actually give you one actual tactical thing, because I know your audience really likes actionable things, and you do a really good job providing that in all your episodes. You know, you mentioned the piece of paper, and this is something that I use all the time. I call it a conversational map, right? So let's say that we're in the middle of something, and so especially when I had people, you know, when I had to start transitioning out of people who are bloggers, I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to ask you how you got started with blogging. I have to actually come up with questions that are relevant to your background. So what I would do is, while they were giving an answer, I would draw an arrow and I would write my next question, and then I would just go back to listening. And this, again, it's one of those things that takes some balance, but it's funny because effectively what you're doing is you're creating a map of the conversation, but you're drawing it as you go, so it creates this natural flow. So that might be something that's actually helpful for your listeners.
Yeah, that's really cool. Do you prep a lot for your presentations? Like, if you're going to interview somebody, how much prep work do you do?
Very minimal. So part of the reason I don't do a lot of prep work is that I feel too much research kills curiosity and creativity.
Thank you.
It just, I'm not somebody who, like, because the thing is, here's the thing. I want to know the things that nobody has ever asked them about before. Like, I want to talk to them about the things I'm just morbidly curious about. And the problem is that we lose the opportunity to have those really genuine, really juicy conversations when we do too much research, because research causes too much planning, and then, you know, the whole conversation sounds scripted. Like, you know, I'll give you an example. We had Simon Sinek on our show recently, and it was funny because I was having, you know, guest with a Bloodcast FM listener, and she said, you know, it's funny because she said at the beginning of the interview, it was the typical Simon Sinek. It literally was one of his speeches. And she said, I loved how when you got him to a certain point, you wouldn't let him off the hook. And you made him talk about things that he wouldn't talk about elsewhere because he didn't. And you know, I think that's a common thread between any Blogcast FM guest, is that they share things that they don't share elsewhere. But part of that is because I don't do a lot of research. And I think it leads to really interesting conversations.
Absolutely. I have to 100% back you up on that. I don't do much research when I interview people as well, because I want, you know, I feel like when I don't do the research, I'm exactly in the same place as my audience. And I can ask the same exact questions that are on their mind when they're listening to.
Yeah, I've never even thought about it that way. That's a really good point.
Sweet. So let's move on. Let's talk about this conference you have coming up, because lately on Instagram and on Facebook, I've been seeing these amazing drawings come up, and each drawing sort of reveals another person who's going to be speaking at this event. A, where did the idea for this event come from? B, sure. How the heck are you putting it all together?
So funny you ask about the putting it together part. We're literally in LA right now, and the reason I'm doing this interview from a co-working space is because we've been at venues all morning, you know, looking, and we're going to another venue this afternoon. So let's talk about the where did it come from part. So, you know, one of the things that I kept seeing over and over, like, you know, went to a lot of conferences, and the more I went to them, the less I liked them. Like, something about them I didn't walk away feeling like, wow, that was really amazing. That dazzled me. Like, it took my breath away. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, at moments it felt like that, but I was like, you know, why is the whole experience like that? Like, why is it that we're sitting under fluorescent lights in hotel rooms? We're supposed to be the nonconformists and the unconventional people, and we're not actually doing anything unconventional.
So well said.
This is pretty standard. So I wanted to break all those rules and all those conventions. But I mean, obviously with 400 interviews, you start to get perspectives on things. You know, the other thing I wanted is I wanted an event where it wasn't, you know, the same people. I was sick of going to events where it was all the same speakers. And, you know, I was like, there's some amazing voices out there. We need to celebrate these voices. We need to really put them on, you know, let's put the light on them. Let's put them center stage, and let's show the world that, you know what, these people matter. You know, I was reading Malcolm Gladwell's book, David and Goliath, and he talks about, you know, I think it was the Impressionists, and, you know, the big thing in I think the 1700s or 1800s was that the salon was the place to actually hang your art, and if you got accepted there, then you became famous. But what these guys did was they said, you know what, screw it, we're going to do our own private gallery opening. And of course, those people went on. I mean, they're like, I think people in that group include Monet, and some other ones. So you know, really, the idea was also to look at the structure and sort of the format and say, you know, why are we just sitting in a room all day passively consuming information? I was like, you know, the whole point of being here is to create something interactive and engaging. So, you know, I interviewed this guy named Eric Wall sometime in the summer, and he is really interesting because he's a graffiti artist, but he wrote a best-selling business book. And I mean, you should have him on your show, Pat. I think your listeners would love him. He's really inspiring. And, you know, the thing is, I'd asked him about his speaking, and he'd gotten over 1,000 standing ovations. And he told me his work is about, you know, taking extreme mashups from various art forms and combining them together to create epic audience experiences. So what he does is he gets on stage and he has rock music playing, he's painting on a canvas, and then in between the paintings, he actually gives his speech, which is amazing.
That is awesome.
So, you know, and the thing is that, you know, there's no rule, like, that goes against every best practice for speaking. Like, there's no rules for this. And then that's the thing. It's like, here's a blank canvas, make art. Mm-hmm. And so that's really one of the big driving forces behind this was, let's do something so different, so unique, and so unusual that when people walk away, they say, oh my God, we've never experienced something like that. That is the most unreal, mind-blowing, life-changing experience we've ever had. And so we're taking extreme mashups from different art forms. Like, you know, the way we're opening the event is like a movie, not like a conference. Like, we actually have a movie trailer that we're working on specifically to be the opening sequence of the event. I mean, so we're approaching it more like a theatrical performance with business content laid underneath it. I guess you could call it like the Cirque du Soleil of business conferences is the way I would describe it.
I love this because, you know, it's sort of like, okay, you've been to conferences and you and I have, you know, connected many times at these different conferences, and you just felt like there was a need for something different, or you weren't being fulfilled at these conferences. So what did you do? You were just creating one of your own.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. You're creating the conference of your dreams, basically.
I wanted to create the conference that I wanted to go to. And you know, I mean, even the way I chose my speakers. So conventional wisdom might say, well, Srini's interviewed 400 people. A lot of them are really big names with big email lists who could, you know, they'll draw a crowd. And I said, you know, I'm like, yeah, maybe, but that's not my signature. Like, anybody could do that. That's been done. How about doing something? I mean, if you look at the common thread between our guests, there's only one, and that's the fact that they're connected to me. Like, I wanted it to have my signature on it. So, you know, it was basically what I call unmistakable. It was like the only person that could have put this group of people in the same room as Srini. And the truth is, the other part that makes this really amazing is nobody's ever put this group of people into the same room. I jokingly call them the Ocean's 11 of the web, even though there's only 9 of them.
Nice. That's so cool. Now, let's talk about you actually planning this thing. What does it take to put on an event like this really quick?
Well, so you, I mean, you've seen my Facebook comments, and I've joked many times on the Wildcast FM podcast that it's a bit like planning a wedding and starting a religion at the same time. you know, the amount, so here's another thing you have to think about. One of the things I think a lot of events don't think about is they think it's just about gathering a bunch of cool speakers and putting them in a room and, you know, selling tickets. You know, Greg Hartle, who's worked very closely with me on this, one of the questions he asked me right at the beginning, he said, what is the transformation that you want people to experience from being here? And that drove every decision from that point forward.
That's cool.
Because, you know, the thing is that a conference should not be about the speakers. It's about the attendees. And, you know, everything we're doing is very attendee focused. I mean, we didn't just go to our speakers and say, we want you. You get to pick what, you know, you're going to talk about. We actually picked. So what we did, you know, the premise of the Instigator Experience is to bring a bold idea to life. I mean, we've sat down in agonizing detail planning from, you know, literally the moment people walk through the door to the moment they walk out. Every transition between speakers, like how are we doing the transitions, set changes, everything. It's a production. It really is. And, you know, and part of it is to design this transformation, because so many things happen on a subconscious level that actually matter. And so few people think about these details. So that's a big part of it. It is really, really being clear on what is the outcome for the attendee. And in our case, it's bring a bold idea to life. And the other thing is that we wanted people to start working on their ideas while they're there, because too often people go home inspired and then they go back to their life and never do anything. Mm-hmm. And we were like, we're not going to let that happen. We're also putting in an application process specifically to ensure that we get a very, very diverse cross-section of people, because the more diverse the perspectives are in the room, the more everybody will grow. You know, Robert Greene, who wrote the book Mastery, when I interviewed him, he gave me this beautiful analogy about consumption. And he says, you know, the analogy is biodiversity. He said the richer, the more species there are in an ecosystem, the richer the ecosystem is. So really, by you know, having an application process and ensuring a diverse group of people, we're going to create a very rich ecosystem. So as a byproduct, everybody flourishes.
That's really cool. And what I like about what I love about the application process too, and I see this in when people, you know, sell courses and things like that, that, you know, when people apply for something, they are, you know, almost committing to it. And mm-hmm. what that happens is when they are approved, if they are, they're going to be much more gung-ho about, you know, getting the most out of that experience.
Yeah, I mean, and that's another thing, right, is that you want people who are serious. We don't want people who are just going to go there and be like, okay, that was amazing, cool. And here's the other thing. We're not allowing laptops or smartphones in the room. We're not, you know, because this is, you know, one of the big taglines is this is not your typical business conference. Like, I'm not interested in you marketing my event while you're there. I could care less about that. I'm interested in seeing you have such a radical transformation that next year I don't have to sell anything, because – you know, you've had such a change in your life that people are lined up to be part of it again. And the thing is, even when it comes to venue selection, Pat, like we were looking, you know, we're at this place this morning, and it's not like we're not looking at we basically said nothing that resembles a conference center. Like our event planners, like, you guys are insane. I said it can't resemble no hotel rooms, no convention centers, no conference rooms, nothing that resembles anything. And we were actually just at a place this morning where movies have been filmed. Like, it's a studio lot that we can do. And because the thing is, we're creating an environment that we're going to manipulate the environment multiple times. There'll be set changes, like multiple times throughout the event. It'll seem like you're in a different space, even though you're in one the whole time.
That's awesome. That's so cool. Where can we get more information about the Instigator experience?
So I think by the time your listeners are listening to this, our sales page will be up and it'll be at theinstigatorexperience.com. We're only selling 60 tickets. So, get it, apply as quickly as possible. We're going to approve applications in the order in which they're received. So
nice. I wouldn't be surprised if by the time people hear this and they go there, it's already sold out.
That would be a high quality problem to have.
Absolutely. Now let's move on to some of your books, Srini, because you've been publishing some books, and some of them have been doing really, really well. I'm on your Amazon Prime, or I'm not Amazon Prime. I'm on your Amazon page right now for your author page, and I see 5 books. The first one, give us the journey of these books and sort of where they've taken you.
Yeah, I mean, I got to the point where I realized, ironically, even though I'd interviewed all these people who were getting book deals, it didn't seem like, there was a publisher knocking on my door. And I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm done waiting. I'm like, I can't, I have something to say, so I'm going to put it out in the world. But, the first book we did was called Blog to Book Deal. It was just a trend, repurposing of our interviews. Somebody had said, hey, you guys have all these interviews, you just make them Kindle books. And we, our eyes were like, oh, look, there's the gold mine. We're going to make thousands of dollars. That was, I think, a wrong intent. The part of it, the intention was flawed there, because it wasn't about providing anything that was useful. It was all about us making money. Like, that was the only thing we cared about. So that book flopped. It didn't do well. The best thing to come from it was James Altucher found it, and he became a friend of mine. And that, to me, was the most valuable thing to come out of that. But I learned a lot of things. And so the next book was called The Small Army Strategy. And, Mark Schaefer had pointed out that, hey, I'd been blogging at his blog for about a year, and he said I'd been riffing on a theme the whole year. And, to me, I was like, okay, well, if that's the case, I bet there's a lot of common threads between all those posts. So I did that. And so I assembled it. I asked him if I could have the content, and he was totally cool about it, even though he'd paid me to write for him. He said, yeah, he's like, I think it'll be good for you. And of course, I didn't just, slap it all together and throw it up on Amazon. There's a lot of massaging and editing. And of course, I added new sections. And while I was adding new sections, what I was doing was I was sharing these snippets on Facebook. And the snippets went from like being 3 sentences to paragraphs to eventually like 1,000 word daily updates.
Wow.
So what ended up happening is, so the Small Army Strategy, what was cool about giving so much of that book away for free on Facebook was when the day came for the launch, and I made it free for the first 5 days, I emailed all the people who had been following me on Facebook, the ones who were commenting and all the snippets. I said, hey, I just wanted to send you a free copy. So I sent out like 20 or 25 free copies, and I said that if you like it, I sent it out before the book came out. I said, if you like it, review it. And the thing is, it really struck a chord, which was cool. And so I got 25-star reviews on the first day. That book probably hit 1,000 copies. I'm sure it's surpassed 1,000 copies. It has something like 88 5-star reviews on Amazon. It's funny, right? Because it's all self-published. Like, I've seen traditionally published books that don't reach this level of success. But where it got interesting, I think, with the journey of the books is the next one, where I decided to become very, very transparent. Like, for so long, I think I've been playing this game in my comfort zone, or, with one foot outside my comfort zone and the other one still back there on the off chance that, hey, maybe this whole thing will fall apart and I might have to go get a normal job. After a while, I realized that the ship had sailed for me to ever have a normal job, because, it's been 4 years. I was like, it's pretty clear I'm committed to this path. I think it's time I stopped playing it safe and took some real risks. And for me, that risk was true, honest, raw, vulnerable transparency, in which I showcased all my flaws. I talked about it, the fact that I'd been fired from every job. I talked about the fact that I was 35 and lived at home. It was the most honest writing I'd ever done. And in that process, I found my voice, and I was doing it via Facebook through these public status updates. And after a while, I was just getting a following on Facebook. And of course, I knew that, I wasn't going to forever, just write endlessly cool updates. Like, I had an end in mind. I was like, I just wasn't sure what that end was. I was like, I knew someday, on my 34th birthday, I think was the one, or 35th, sorry, sometimes you forget.
Right. After 30, it doesn't really.
Yeah. So I wrote this post titled The Observations of a Life That Hasn't Gone According to Plan. And, it was really, really open. And that ended up sort of, setting me loose. And from that point forward, I was just like, wow, this guy is really transparent. But something happened. My writing changed, my voice changed. And of course, I also got into the habit of 1,000 words a day, no matter what, because I was, having to do so much writing for a freelance gig, for a startup I'm working on with Greg Cardle, and even my own writing. And I was like, okay, the only way I'm going to produce this much, volume on a consistent basis that I actually have to like commit to is just by writing 1,000 words a day. And that fundamentally changed my writing. Now, like, I can't not do it. It's a habit. So you know, what ended up happening, of course, is a lot of those essays in the midst of this, you know, because I did it all on Facebook, a woman named Carolyn Masseri, who is the editor of all my books, found me and she offered to help me with the editing and really shape the arc and narrative of these books. So, you know, we did this most recent book, The Art of Being Unmistakable, which is, you know, The Art of Being Unmistakable, a collection of essays about making a dent to the universe. And largely, I mean, it's a combination of sort of self-help, my creative process, my views on how the, you know, why we have to be artists on the web as opposed to just entrepreneurs, which I really wanted. That's the perspective I'd really love to talk to you about in more detail. And so, you know, that book, I think the week it came out, it sold 360 copies. And I was stoked. I was like, okay, cool. This is, you know, it's not 1,000 copies yet, but, you know, I thought 1,000 copies is the goal. And then, you know, one afternoon I was, you know, looking on it just to see the most recent reviews, and either one of my friends had written, and I saw it was number one in entrepreneurship, and I was like, oh, cool. So I tweeted about it, and some guy replied back saying, hey, you might want to thank Glenn Beck. And he raved about your book on a show. I was like, okay. I'm like, I'd heard of Glenn Beck at this time. Keep in mind, like, I don't watch the news, man. I have the pop culture taste of a teenage girl. Like the CW TV is my favorite, you know, source of television. So I was like, and so I replied back. I'm like, well, Glenn Beck, huh? I'm like, he's kind of a big deal, isn't he? And so, you know, of course, I go on to find out that he's this very like polarizing figure. When I share it on Twitter, you know, somebody or on Facebook, and it's like, yeah, it's like, you know, it's kind of a double edged sword. You know, having Glenn Beck tout your books, but then, so, you know, I went and looked, and the numbers were skyrocketing in Amazon. So, you know, I asked James, you know, I ousted James Altucher from the number one spot in the entrepreneurship category. And I saw that the units, you know, my friend Angela said, I think you're not realizing the magnitude of this. She said, go look at your Amazon dashboard and see how many books you've sold. And I was like, oh my God, I'm like, we sold 1,000 copies in one day.
Nice.
You know, and I'd set a goal a year ago to sell 1,000 copies of a book. I had no idea how it was going to happen. And I was
1,000 copies in a day.
Yeah, it was pretty surreal. And so, I mean, but here's the thing, right? Is that, like, I set that goal, but here's what I would say is I think that outcomes are very arbitrary, and I think that outcome based goals are actually dangerous. The truth is that the only part of that I controlled was writing 1,000 words a day and shipping. Right? Mm-hmm. Like I couldn't say that, hey, you know, I want to, like, I couldn't say, okay, I have to hit 1,000 copies. Yeah, I might have been able to manufacture it with some nonsense, but authentically sell 1,000 copies. That's largely out of my control. And this is something that I'm learning more and more, is that so many of our goals are outcome based. And the problem with that is that we don't control outcomes, but behavior is something we control. So in a lot of ways, we can kind of say, okay, set the goals and just throw them away. And we should think spend a lot more time concerning ourselves with the behavior required to reach those goals than the actual goals themselves.
Yeah.
So anyways, you know, Glenn Beck found it. I emailed Glenn Beck and said, hey man, I'm the one who wrote that book. Thank you. You know, so regardless of, you know, what your politics are at this point, especially because I'm not political. I mean, my knowledge of politics goes to about, you know, all I know is like who our current president is. Beyond that, I could care less. You know, I emailed him and I said, thank you. I mean, I was like, you know what? Here's a guy who's given me a very, very important moment. I was like, this guy just turned my book into a bestseller. So how can you not be grateful for that, regardless of what his story is? So I got an email from the producers of the show the next day, and they said, hey, Srini, Glenn wants to have you come into the studio and be on the show. Would you be interested? And I was like,
that's great.
Yeah, sure. Why not? You know, this is actually something worth mentioning. You know, knowing, you know, like at this point, my knowledge of Glenn Beck was starting to increase because I was seeing how people were responding on Facebook. Like, you know, I was like, hey, this guy's a total, you know, blowhard Republican, like all this kind of stuff, you know. I mean, because the thing is, you know, we all have opinions about celebrities and stuff. So I did a few Google searches and I made a very deliberate decision that I was going to not do any research. See, I see the theme again.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because what I found was actually pretty disturbing. And I thought, you know, I need to go in and I need to have a really genuine conversation with him. So I need to see him as a person, not a persona. Because what you don't realize is, unlike you and me, Pat, when somebody like Glenn speaks into a microphone, it has an echo. And his echo is much crazier than ours because 30 million people hear it.
Yeah.
And a lot of us say things that piss people off. But you know what? 30 million people don't hear everything we have to say. And it's like a game of telephone. So what happens is that echo gets mangled. Like he actually said, somebody took something he said on air out of context and said he's an advocate of child abuse. You know, it was like, so you kind of realize that, okay, the media creates this mask and it creates a persona, So I made a very deliberate decision. And so I got to actually get to know Glenn as a person. And the truth is that Pat, you know, despite the fact that he's Glenn Beck, what he does is not very different than what you or I do. He's a media creator and a media producer who's trying to get a message out to the world. It's just in a very different context. Mm-hmm. And you know what? There's a lot to learn from that. He's been very successful. You can't argue with, you know, what he's learned. I mean, and the truth is that, you know, it was interesting. The most fascinating part of that day was when I sat on, you know, his office with him. You know, he sat on one couch, I sat on the other, and he talked to me about life. He talked to me about success. He talked to me about all the things he'd done wrong in his life, all the places he had failed. You know, the funniest story I think he told me is that Michael Bublé is a friend of his. And, you know, he said that Bublé was somewhere and mentioned that he and Glenn Beck were friends, and somebody punched Michael Bublé in the face. He got into a fist fight over the fact that he's friends with Glenn Beck.
Wow.
So, but, you know, when he started talking about all these people, it's like, wait a minute, these are all like our heroes and role models. You know, people we all look up to are friends of Glenn Beck. You know, because then you realize, okay, well, you know, the media creates a mask and, you know, it creates a persona, so we can't always trust what we're seeing. And you know what? Like I said, at the end of the day, this guy gave me a career-defining moment. I mean, the book has gone on to sell 10,000 copies. I think it sold 10,000 copies that week, actually.
That's so awesome. I'm looking at the page right now, you know, all, mostly five-star reviews. I'm looking at the number one in entrepreneurship, number one in creativity, number two in books for entrepreneurship, not just Kindle books, but all books. Mm-hmm. Amazing, yeah. Man. Congrats.
Thanks. I mean, it got as high as number seven in the entire Kindle store on, you know, the day that I was on the show. And, you know, here's one thing you think about. You know, you said mostly five-star reviews, but if you look at the one-star reviews, they're pretty brutal. But, you know, one of my friends said, if you didn't get any one-star reviews, you didn't say anything very bold. You know, Justine Musk says that if you have, you know, a strong, bold point of view, which is the most compelling kind, you're going to piss some people off.
Yeah.
And I definitely did. But, you know, I mean, the cool thing, Pat, I would say, has been the amount of emails I've received about how many people have found that book to be life-changing, like, you know, and saying, hey, this is something, I don't know what your words just spoke to me. And you know, like, there are people who are like, oh, I'm going to buy 10 copies for my kids. This should be required reading for every college graduate.
That's so cool, man.
That's really probably the most rewarding thing. And I, you know, I would say to that is that you can't manufacture that. You know, Kamal Ravikant is a friend of mine and one of the speakers at the Instigator Experience. He said that, you know what? He's like, if you want people to share something, create something that connects with them. And, you know, I mean, part of why I think people listen to you, Pat, is that, you know, despite your success, we see a very human side of you. Like, you talk about your family, you talk about your kids, you know, we actually see, you know, like, and also there's no gap between who you are online and who you are in person. And I think that far too often I've seen that with a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, I always try to be real in every aspect of my life, where I'm at and what I'm doing. And that's obviously coming from you too. So, I mean, it's crazy how this all started with just being honest and completely transparent on Facebook. And then it turned mm-hmm. to this book, and then just got found. And like you said, you can't manufacture that. You can't force that to happen. It just sort of does happen.
Yeah.
Over
well,
time.
I mean, I would say one thing. I mean, it's worth noting the 1,000 words a day. I mean, like, that's so much of this is about, like, let's say that I had just written the book and tried to put it out on Amazon and Glenn Beck found it. I think part of what made it resonate was that I've spent a lot of time, like, working on the craft element of this, you know, and I feel like this is overlooked by so many of us. I mean, we were talking about interviews earlier. Like, you have to approach all of this as a craft, and really you have to view yourself as an artist who is constantly refining your craft and really working on, you know, how do I get better at what I do? Like, how do I outdo what I just did? Like, every interview I try to think, you know, I mean, what keeps me up at night is, how do you find more Meg Wardens? How do you find more AJ Leons? You know, like, I'm not interested in finding the next social media celebrity. I'm like, how do I find a story that touches people's hearts? Because, you know, if you saw the recent Steve Jobs movie, you know, at the very beginning, Ashton Kutcher's on the stage saying, he's like, you know, this is the cool thing about the iPod, is it's a tool for your heart. And when you can touch somebody's heart, that's limitless. And I love that. That was so inspiring to me. The movie sucks, but that's a whole other story.
You had mentioned, you know, becoming an artist, and I've sort of seen this in you, Srini, over the last few years, and watching you progress and where you come to now. I mean, your work is art now, it seems. Before, you were doing interviews and getting people who were doing blogs, and it was very entrepreneurial. And now you seem to be sort of an artist. What would you want to say? You said, you mentioned you wanted to just touch on that a little bit before up here.
I think that here's the thing, you know, Pat, is that the world is, like, way noisier than it was when you and I started doing all of this, right? Like, we started in, I think you started in 2008, I started in 2009. And, you know, what stands out is people who are unique, people who have, you know, sort of an artistic signature. The problem is that we follow so many best practices. I mean, and you know what? People like you and me are responsible to that, for that to some degree,
right,
because we provide all this information. But, you know, I've said this over and over again. It's like, don't just take the information we're giving you and try to follow it to the letter. It's like, put your own spin on it, adapt, you know, because here's the thing, right, is that When you approach this like an artist, you'll bring something to it that nobody else could create. Like, you know, I mean, even when we talk about the instigator experience, nobody else could conceive of the like just pure neuroticism that is going into this event. Like, I mean, if you saw my last Facebook status update, I said, hey, does anybody know where I can get a school bus that doesn't work?
I saw that. I was like, what?
I was like, I want a school, saw a school bus and have to set up, you know, part of the environment for one of the workshops that we have. Like, I want to gut the school bus and make it one of the elements of the environment. But nobody else would come up with that, right? Because you know what? Like, I could say, okay, let's do the standard things. And I think being an artist, is about looking at standards and asking yourself, how do I not only defy those standards, but, you know, Seth Godin talks about this idea of overwhelming people with joy. Like, I want people's senses to be delighted by everything I do and every element of everything I do. Like, I'll give you another example. I was at the post office yesterday, and we, you know, we've made posters. Like, we started doing physical goods. See, and this is something that might be interesting to your listeners. Most of them probably have never thought, you know, oh, why not do a physical product that is like an artifact or a piece of work? You know, I had this blog post titled 15 Principles for Living a Creative Life. And one of my listeners said, Srini, this is beautiful. You should turn it into a poster. So I emailed my friend Sarah Steenland, who's an amazing illustrator. I said, what do you think? She said, okay, cool. I'll get back to you with it. She sketched it out. We ordered a copy on Zazzle to see what it would look like. And now we have a poster for sale.
That's cool.
So, but you know, when I went into the post office, these poster tubes were in there, and I was like, wow, it's like, these things are hideous. Like, why are we mailing them in these? And like, the tape looks screwy. I'm like, you know, I'm like, this whole process should be beautiful. I'm like, I want it to be like the unboxing of an Apple product. So like I said, the real thing here is that what I would say is we become victims of these best practices. And I think that we have to basically approach all of this as if we're working with a blank canvas and say, okay, you know what? I've got all these tools, but why don't I combine things in a way that only I could, or a way that nobody else does, you know, like take different, you know, I mean, I think I'm very blessed in that I've gotten so many different perspectives on all of this. You know, I have people like you who really get, you know, sort of how to really actually, you know, operationally make something work in a way that very few people do. And then I get an Eric Wall, who's a graffiti artist, right, who gives me a very different perspective than you. And to me, I think what my work has become about is combining all of those things, combining all of these ingredients to make dishes that only I could make. And that's, I think, really is, I think to me, that's where your ability to tap into, you know, your own ability to be unmistakable lies.
Dude, I mean, that was awesome. I can't think of anything else to say beyond that. I mean, that's a perfect way to close up. So, Srini, thank you so much for all that, all the inspiration. Congratulations on all of your success. I wish you the best of luck with the Instigator experience. I know I'm going to be hearing a lot about it, you know, once it's over. And, you know, hopefully we can have a chance, if it's not sold out already by the time people check this out, to come back and do it again next year if it's something you choose to do again.
Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely.
Dude, where should we go to get more information from you?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, for the event, theinstigatorexperience.com will be all, you know, all the information for that will be there. Blogcast FM, you can find in iTunes. I mean, if you look in the What's Hot section for management and marketing, I think you and I are always there in that, like, you know, top panel. Mm-hmm. So you can either subscribe to us in iTunes or visit us at blogcastfm.com.
Awesome. And just as a, you know, we had mentioned this before. Actually, for those of you listening, this is the second time we've recorded this, because the first time the quality of the audio wasn't good. And Srini and I are both sort of just, we gotta put the best quality stuff out there.
Exactly.
So we were happy to do this again. And I think it went, I mean, not to say
actually,
that.
I think it's a lot better.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounded more eloquent as far as I'm concerned.
It did. And that's not to say the first time was terrible, but I mean, I think it you know, we talked about a lot of the same things, but it went really, really well. And I think also that I just, you know, just as far as what we did there, I mean, we want to always demonstrate, you know, we always want to provide the best for our audience. We weren't going to compromise audio quality. And, you know, what actually was happening was one of our sounds was just going out every like minute, and it was just really annoying. So thank you again for coming on and agreeing to do this again with me. Congratulations on all of your success, Srini. And, you know, you had mentioned the last time, and I want to make sure we do this in case people listen to this in the future. There's going to be a little bit of a rebranding with Blogcast FM.
Oh, yeah. So we're changing the name of the show. And as I told you, I can't tell you just yet because it's still in process. It'll be done by January. But we just realized, you know, the truth is that our show is not about blogging. It's about being creative. It touches so many elements of life and creativity and art and business. You know, we're really a show designed for creative entrepreneurs. The thing is that we've outgrown the brand Blogcast FM, and you want a brand that you can grow into and do other things with. So that's around the corner. So keep an eye out for that. You know, changing the name of a show on iTunes is something that I'm not looking forward to personally, but mainly because, you know, Apple is the Bermuda Triangle of information.
Right.
But yeah, so that's coming. It's right around the corner.
Cool, man. Well, we'll all look forward to that. I'll make sure to change any sort of links or anything in the show notes when that does happen, because I want to make
sure. Yeah, and we'll have redirects set up for all of that.
So okay, sweet.
So it should all work fine.
Awesome, buddy. Thank you so much for coming on and spending time with me today and time with the SPI audience. I know we all appreciate you and everything you're doing. All the best of luck, and we'll talk to you at a later time.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you for having me, Pat.
Thanks. All right, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Srini from Blogcast FM. You can look up Blogcast FM in iTunes and subscribe to his show, or also go to blogcastfm.com to see what else he's got going on there. A lot of great things, inspiring things. Just got, you know, I've been following Srini for a very long time, and just to see his transformation is incredible. So I'm really, really happy for him, and I hope you are inspired by the work he's doing and how creative he's been and how he's putting art into his entrepreneurship. And I feel like a lot of us can benefit from doing the same thing and being creative with the work that we do to serve our audiences. So if you'd like to get the show notes for this episode, there's a lot of resources that Srini mentioned, a lot of links to previous episodes and resources and things like that. You can go to smartpassiveincome.com/session88. Again, that's smartpassiveincome.com/session88. You can get all that good stuff there. If you haven't checked out the site in a while, you might want to visit because it's brand new. It was redesigned a week ago, and we are still making changes to it, my developer and I. And you know, we're constantly testing and using heat maps to see what's working and what's not. And there will be a very detailed post coming up soon, if not already on the blog, about the design changes and why things are the way they are and what's working, what's not, what didn't work before and why we made certain changes and all that good stuff. Stay tuned for the next episode, session 89, because we're going to have Gary Vaynerchuk on the show. We're going to be talking about his new book, Jab, 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 Right Hook, a lot of things that I'm doing wrong in social media that I can improve on. And just, you know, Gary's a cool guy. Like, first time I spoke to him, I already had the interview done, and he's just super cool. A lot of great stuff. He was one of the original people who had inspired me with his book, Crush It. And I have to say, this book, to me, this book is a different kind of book, but it blows it out of the water. Anyway, I'll see you in episode 89 with Gary Vaynerchuk. Hope you enjoy that, but I hope you enjoy this show as well. smartpassiveincome.com/session88. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. If you have time to leave a review on iTunes, you are awesome. If not, maybe next time. Thank you so much. Keep pushing forward. Keep making things happen. Love you guys. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Passive Income Podcast at www.smartpassiveincome.com.
Entrepreneurs, what is the smart way to save when your growing business takes you on the road? Whether you're going to events or conventions or you're speaking somewhere, no matter what it is, you need to sign up for a free membership with Hertz Business Rewards. Yep, Hertz Rental Car created a program to help small and mid-sized businesses save money. Work trips, client meetings, industry conferences. With Hertz Business Rewards, you save at least 20% every time you rent a car. And you'll save on more than just the daily rate. Members earn credits redeemable toward free rental days, and it's also free to add an additional driver if any additional coworkers come along. And for those Gen Z entrepreneurs out there, no young renter fees. Plus, sign up for Hertz Business Rewards today and earn 3x credit during your first 90 days. These benefits add up to big savings that stack more dollars in your wallet. Join for free at hertz.com/businessrewards. Applies to base rate, taxes, fees, and options excluded. Additional terms and exclusions apply. Visit hertz.com/businessrewards to learn more. Hey there, and thanks for sticking around to the end. If you're looking for more great shows like this one, definitely give How Success Happens a listen, another great show from the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. On How Success Happens, Robert Tuchman features some of today's brightest entrepreneurial minds talking about overcoming challenges and viewing them as learning experiences to create success. The challenges that entrepreneurs face are ultimately what make many of us successful, however we define success, and that's what the show is all about. There's lots of names you'll surely recognize on the show every single week. Just recently, Robert had Nasty Gal CEO Sophia Amoruso on the show, and the former CEO of Snapple the week before that, which is really awesome. So listen to How Success Happens right now on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or Stitcher.